Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
I'm Chelsea, and I still love true crime.
And I'm David, and I still love horror movies. And welcome to Behind the Screams. This episode was originally created for our Patreon listeners as an exclusive, but since the show is on hiatus, we thought it'd be a great way to give something new to most of you.
We may have references to news events that are now far in the past, and also the style of these former Patreon episodes is a little different than our regular episodes, but we hope you enjoy the show.
Urban legends are defined as lurid stories that are circulated as true, often with the teller claiming that it happened to a friend of a friend, with each tale taking on regional characteristics.
Still, as the saying goes, at the heart of every legend, there is a grain of truth.
This is based on a true crime.
I'm Chelsea and I love true crime.
And I'm David and I love horror movies.
And welcome to this month's Patreon bonus episode.
Yeah, hey, what's up?
Yeah, we're really excited for this one. I think we've been talking about watching this movie together for as long as we've been together, and yet we never did.
We were waiting for its 20th anniversary, which was like just a little while ago.
Yeah. So today we'll be talking about urban legends. This month we picked the movie, but we let you guys vote on which urban legends we'd be discussing more in depth. So the winners were Bloody Mary and the Hatchet Man.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I'm a big fan of urban legends. And I, spoiler alert, I really enjoyed the movie. It's right up my alley. It's of the period of time that I have nostalgia for. David is with 80s horror movies. It's me with my mid-90s to mid-2000s horror movies.
The nice thing is they had huge budgets. Apparently it was like 55 days to shoot. So many movies these days, like horror movies have like 10 or 15 days.
Yeah, and I think it really shows.
Yep, big stars, big budget, slick. I enjoyed it too. Spoiler alert.
It was fun. It was enjoyable. Was it a great movie? I don't know. We'll probably discuss that more in depth in the second half of the episode.
Yep.
But why don't we start? So David, you did the Bloody Mary research. I'm super excited to hear all about it.
Ooh, yeah. Well, let's
But be careful
in.
Not to say it three times.
Well, I probably will.
I think I already said it twice. So.
Yeah.
There's no mirrors in here.
Yeah, instead we'll just say Beetlejuice instead.
Oh no.
Yep. Bloody Mary. I'm sure a lot of you know about this urban legend. It has many incarnations. However, Bloody Mary is basically the children's game of summoning a fantastic being through a mirror. The traditional method of invoking Bloody Mary was you would walk up a flight of stairs backwards while holding a candle and a hand mirror. And as you looked into the mirror, there was a possibility that you could see your future husband in the reflection. And if you see a skull instead, it means you're destined to die before marriage.
That is terrifying.
Yeah, that's
pretty
scary. And it has since been modernized a bit over the years, and the modern version of Bloody Mary is often played as a way to conjure up an evil and vengeful witch, or in some cases a ghost, or just some sort of entity in general, depending on your region. And you basically, though, the thing that is consistent through this is that you stand in a bathroom with one candle lit, and then you call out the name Bloody Mary into the mirror three times. And by summoning the witch, there are several terrible consequences. I pulled a list of some of those consequences from an article, the website Castle of Spirits, which had some good intel on Bloody Mary. Some of those consequences included your eyes may be ripped out, you'll be found with claw marks all over your body. You'll mysteriously disappear from the bathroom and end up in the mirror with the witch for eternity, which that one terrified me.
That is scary.
You'll view the horrifying image of the witch, which will appear in the mirror, which I think that's probably the most common one. You'll be driven insane, or you will just really just drop dead on the spot in the bathroom at the appearance of the witch in the mirror.
Yeah, scared to death.
Yep. There's another claw one, which is that you'll suffer claw marks all over your face by seeing Bloody Mary in the mirror.
Yeah. I have to know, did you play Bloody Mary growing up, David?
So there was a Boy Scout variation on it, which was, I guess, like the camping version. And that was, well, it was very regionally specific, but it was Mad Myrtle was, I think.
Oh,
there's
we
like,
talked about Mad
yeah,
Myrtle.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Mad Myrtle was, I think, an orphan or whatever. Anyway, her parents.
Was that our Cropsy episode?
Yes. That was in our Cropsy episode. So yeah, way back when we did talk about this, but I think it's like a Midwestern created thing. I would be really surprised if any of you had heard of Mad Myrtle. The alliteration's great though.
Yeah.
Mad Myrtle. Mad Myrtle was basically, I think, a survivor of some giant tornado that happened in Southern Illinois. And she saw her parents get torn apart by the tornado and came back and enacted revenge, I think, on the Boy Scout camp, something like
that. Because the Boy Scout camp caused the tornado?
Yes.
All right.
Whatever reason, Mad Myrtle, Bloody Mary. How about you? Have you ever attempted to conjure Bloody Mary, Chelsea?
Of course.
Yeah.
I feel like Bloody Mary is a very female-specific urban legend or like sleepover game or whatever, which I think it makes a lot of sense that the origin of it was trying to see your future husband. I feel like I have not talked to many guys who have done it or taken it seriously, at least, whereas all the girls are like, Bloody Mary, it's so scary. But yeah, oh, I definitely did Bloody Mary. Never had my eyes ripped out. I'm not sure that we lit a candle when we did it though, so maybe we've just been doing it wrong all these years.
Maybe it's like a cell phone light now or something.
Yeah. Well, I better be careful in our bathroom. I feel like we often have a candle burning in there.
Oh yeah, you're right. Nope. Yep, that's true. Well, Bloody Mary has many names, and this is just from the legend, the stories being told for so long over time. I had grabbed these from a website, ThoughtCo, on Bloody Mary, and they had mentioned her names included Mary Worth, Hell Mary, Mary White, or Mary Jane. And they had at least kind of traced it back to the tale having emerged from British folklore in the 1700s. And then it has since taken on new life through the modern era, you know, especially morphed with slasher movies and all of the horror stuff. And also, I think some, you know, creepypasta and all that has definitely contributed.
Oh, yeah.
So there is a little bit of a true element, but it's kind of all up in the air. I mean, everyone says different things. There was a fun website called Halloween-website.com that had a little bit on Bloody Mary. And they were saying that there are a lot of counts that pointed to a woman named Mary Worth, and she was a person who was horribly disfigured in a car crash. Now, I don't see that how that could have happened in the 1700s, so that seems like more modern version of Bloody Mary.
Yeah, that does seem a little weird to me.
But going back several hundred years, some people are adamant that it is Queen Mary the First of England, and she was the daughter of Henry VIII and Catherine of Aragon. Some people also just tell the story that she was a witch who was burned at the stake and has returned for revenge. And in reading up on that, it sounds like there were no famous Marys in Salem during the witch trials or any of that. So that kind of seems unlikely. I think the most likeliest one is that Bloody Mary is the devil herself who has come for your soul.
Yeah, I think that must be it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do like the Queen Mary story. I've read a little bit about that. I guess there were a lot of rumors swirling around her. I can't remember. She might have gotten like pregnant late in life, and they're like, oh, she stole someone's baby. And
yeah,
part of like the Bloody Mary thing is she's going to come through the mirror and steal your baby.
There's also like Elizabeth of Bathory.
Oh, yep. Elizabeth Bathory, the vampire. Did we talk about her? We didn't talk about her in our Dracula episode.
I don't know if we did or not.
We'll do a lady vampire movie at some point and talk about her, because that is a crazy story.
So yeah, if your name is Mary, hey, it might be based on you. Who knows?
Yep.
So yeah, there's not a huge list of movies that have really been inspired by this story. A lot of stuff, it was basically down to urban legend, which we're covering. They actually, the third movie in the series that was direct video was Urban Legends Bloody Mary, and then Candyman, which is an amazing movie. That one you have to say Candyman five times.
Oh, so a little bit different. Totally original.
Yes. Yeah. Created by Clive Barker and directed by Bernard Rose. And it's really great. And soon there will be a first time on HD and on Blu-ray from Scream Factory coming out.
And I've never seen it before. I'll definitely have to watch it. I will say there's also an episode of Supernatural with Bloody Mary in it. So
yes, and Supernatural will come up during our film discussion of Urban Legend.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
You know I love my Supernatural.
Yes. So that's Bloody Mary. Chelsea, do you want to jump into the Hatchet Man Urban Legend?
Yes, and I would like to start by reading a common Hatchet Man tale. This is from the book Spooky Indiana by S.E. Schlosser. There were warnings all over campus about a hatchet man who supposedly abused and killed a woman in Bloomington. All the girls were warned to walk in pairs and to stay in brightly lit areas if they had to go out at night. The sophomore and her roommate were staying in the empty dorm over Thanksgiving break, since both their families were out of the country. They grew very bored as day followed boring day and night followed boring night. Tired of staying inside every night for fear of the hatchet man, her roommate suggested they have dinner at a local bar, and the sophomore agreed. The two women lingered for longer than anticipated, and it was almost midnight when the sophomore, more than a little drunk, decided to walk back to the dorm. Her roommate was busy flirting with the bartender, so she headed into the dark, silent streets alone. The sophomore had forgotten all about the hatchet man warnings. It wasn't until she took a shortcut through a dark, creepy alley that she remembered there was a desperate murderer on the loose. The sophomore shivered, feeling suddenly sober and very much alone. She felt as if hostile eyes were peering out at her from every menacing shadow and darkened doorway. She quickened her pace. Was that heavy breathing she heard behind her? Were those footsteps walking in time with her own? The sophomore broke into a run, heart pounding fiercely, sure that someone was following her. She darted onto the college campus, zigzagged through the buildings, and flung herself, panting, into the dorm. She pounded up three flights of stairs, down the hall, and slammed into her room, locking the door behind her. It was only then, leaning against the door with her heart racing, that she started to feel foolish. There was no sound in the hallway, no footsteps, no heavy breathing, no hatchet breaking through the wood of the door. She'd been a fool. The sophomore staggered to the bathroom to wash up for the night, leaving the door locked behind her. She kept glancing in the mirror to make sure that everything was secure. The scene in the mirror was normal, and there was no sound in the empty dormitory. Everything was just fine, she told herself. Then she remembered that her roommate was still at the bar. She didn't want her roommate to walk home alone, so she called the bar and asked the manager if he would arrange for her roommate to be brought home in a taxi. The music in the background was loud, and she wasn't sure if the manager understood her request, but at least she tried. The sophomore curled up in bed with the reading lamp on, determined to wait up for her roommate, but the combination of heavy drinking and her earlier fright sent her into a deep sleep almost at once. She did not awaken until the sun came pouring in the window early the next morning. She woke with a hangover and rolled over, trying not to be sick in bed. When she looked across the room, she realized that her roommate wasn't in bed on the far wall. In fact, it looked as if her bed had not been slept in at all. She rolled to her feet, heart pounding with dread. Maybe her roommate had spent the night in the lobby. Her roommate had done that once before when out partying until the wee hours of the morning, saying it was too much trouble to climb three flights of stairs. With trembling hands, the sophomore unlocked the door and wrenched it open in search of her roommate. The unmistakable, faintly metallic smell of blood smashed into her nostrils as the door swung open. That was her only warning before her shocked eyes saw the blood spattered all over the walls and floor of the third floor hallway. She screamed in terror, leaping away from the partially decapitated body of her roommate, which lay dead at her feet. Her throat was slit from end to end, and blood pooled under her dead body. The nails on her outstretched hand were torn and splintered where they had scratched desperately at the wooden door. A black shadow lay across her roommate's body. She looked up in a daze, her gaze following the black shadow to its source. Embedded in the window frame near the entrance to the staircase was a blood-stained hatchet outlined in the light of the rising sun.
Ooh, yeah. Yikes. Wow.
So that's the Hatchet Man legend. This one was new to me. I had not heard this one in my time as a college student. So this is a very college-specific legend. And essentially it is that there is a hatchet man on the loose. He's usually an escaped serial killer or a crazed ex-student or ex-professor who is, you know, coming to your campus. So you better watch out. This legend seems to have started in the mid-60s. actually following Richard Speck, who we talked about in our Black Christmas episode.
Oh, yep.
So he's the spree slash serial killer who murdered 8 nursing students in a townhouse in Chicago in July of 1966. There also are elements in some versions of it that might be a little bit reminiscent of Ted Bundy. So that was in 1978. So it's after he escaped from prison and he went to Tallahassee, Florida. He was there for about a week before he attacked 4 women inside of Florida State University's Chi Omega sorority house, and he killed 2 of them. It was a very violent attack. He got in through the back door, which had a faulty lock on it. And he was in the house for less than 30 minutes. They say the attack took maybe 15 minutes to brutally beat 2 women and then beat and kill 2 other ones. The creepiest part of that story to me is that one woman who came into the sorority house around 3 a.m., she heard someone. So this was Nita Neary. She heard someone and she like kind of hid around the corner, and she actually saw Ted Bundy come down the stairs and leave with like the murder weapon in his hand, which was a piece of firewood. So like, who knows what would have happened if she didn't hide. But yeah, it's completely brazen attack, you know, within earshot of 30 people. There were girls sleeping in all these rooms, and he just went from room to room, 3 separate rooms, and did that. So he's a monster. We'll talk about him a lot more in our future episode whenever Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile gets a release date. That's the Zac Efron Ted Bundy movie.
We have some props from that movie in our house.
We do have some props from that movie in our house because it was filmed in Cincinnati
when we lived there.
Yeah. So there are a few kind of versions of this story, and it, you know, spread to campuses in different years. So in 1968, in October, at Mount Holyoke College, this rumor kind of spread, and it was just that there's a hatchet man, and the rumor is he's coming to a college, an all-girls college in Massachusetts, with the initials M.H., which is Mount Holyoke. Yeah, a little lame.
Uh-huh.
In the 60s, this story spread across Michigan State University. And in their version, the hatchet man was a serial killer who dressed in women's clothing. And he had killed 40 women across the Midwest. And he was, you know, heading for their campus. And this got reported in the school newspaper.
Wow, that's terrifying.
Yep. And of course, in response, though, boys around campus started putting on women's clothing and chasing around their female cohorts with hatchets.
Oh, of course. So, that's yeah, terrible.
As you do. But from there, it spread to Northern Michigan University, and women there began requesting passwords before they would let anyone into their room. They also reported that some of them received threatening phone calls and letters that were signed, you know, from like Hatch for the Hatchet Man.
Oh, man.
Or Hatch for Hideaway, which we just watched.
Yep, that's yeah, true.
I like that Hatch.
Yeah.
It also spread to Indiana, so kind of going out across the Midwest, and that's where that first story I read came from. So in that story, it's a girl whose roommate is, you know, murdered in the hallway outside of her room by the hatchet man.
Did he ask if she read Sutter Kane?
Oh, yep. No, there are some versions of it. There was one creepy version that I read where it was like the girl who was inside the room heard like scratching on the door at night. And then when she opened the door in the morning, she found that it was like the roommate's hands clenching up from like rigor mortis up against the door. So,
I thought you were going to say it was a kitty cat.
Oh, nope. So there's also a somewhat more modern retelling of this urban legend, and that's called the Campus Halloween Murders.
Ooh, tell us more.
Yeah, so according to this story, you know, there's some psychic, sometimes it's an actual like named famous psychic, who was on a TV show and predicted that a mass murder was going to take place on Halloween at whatever college campus the story is being told in. So the name of the psychic, the TV show, and the number of victims varies. The murder weapon also varies. So, you know, it is often a hatchet or an axe, but sometimes it's a knife. And also sometimes they say that the killer is dressed like little Bo Peep, which I think is reminiscent of the Michigan story about the killer dressing in women's clothing.
Oh, man.
So sometimes with that, it's like, oh, the whole city has now outlawed dressing like little Bo Peep for Halloween.
Yeah. Wow, it's very specific.
Yeah. So the campus Halloween murders became popular in about 1979 in the Midwest. There was a spat of this story being told. 1983, you know, nationwide, people talking about the campus Halloween murders. 1986, in central Pennsylvania, this story was being told. 1991 in New England. So I went to college there, but not in 1991, obviously. And then 1998 in the Midwest. And more recently, 2007, the story was spread around Kent State University in Ohio. So I feel like a story like this, it's almost harder for it to take root because of the internet. I think for it to spread, you have to believe it at least a little bit. Or yeah. You have to be telling it to people who are going to believe it for it to like be any fun as an urban legend. And it's so easy now to check things with the internet that it's just, I don't know. I feel like if someone told me about some psychic on Oprah predicting campus Halloween murders, I'll just pull out my smartphone and be like, no.
Yeah, you're right. It definitely is a lot easier to disprove that sort of stuff. Or yeah, it's like, why would anyone scrub that sort of information? But as we'll see in Urban Legend, that sort of thing does come to pass where the university possibly is hiding something.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, so why don't we transition into that? I feel like Bloody Mary is just briefly presented in the movie. You know, the Hatchet Man is a little bit more of the thread, because the serial killer's weapon of choice does seem to be a hatchet. But there are so many other urban legends, and I'm excited to talk about them with you in the context of the movie.
Yes, excellent. So sit tight. We'll be right back.
Last week, we discussed folklore. Today, we get more specific. This is what we call an urban legend. Contemporary folklore passed on as a true story. Something you might have heard about seeing Pop Rocks and soda.
Supposedly, your stomach and your intestines burst.
Voila, still alive. Mr. Cross, please.
It's gonna explode! Somebody call 911!
They are the legends we've all heard.
Gang members drive around at night with their headlights off. And when someone goes to flash from their high beams to warn them, they kill them.
The stories we've all told.
A guy and a girl, and they're parked out in the woods. The guy steps out, and the girl starts to hear these scratching noises. It's her dead boyfriend hung from a tree.
The tales we've all listened to.
Isn't there another story about a guy with an axe hiding in a woman's backseat?
My mom still checks the backseat before getting into a car.
But just because it never happened doesn't mean it never will.
The decapitated body was found in her car.
I knew I should have gone to NYU.
This girl, she could have been any one of us.
What if there is a lunatic on campus?
What is he gonna do next, huh? Maybe put spider eggs in bubblegum?
The idea of an urban legend serial killer, it's a stretch.
The call's coming from inside the house.
Could it be an urban legend?
Something I can help you with.
I want to know what's going on here.
Someone out there is taking all these urban legends and making them reality.
Urban legend.
Have you heard the one about the microwave?
And we're back. After a woman is murdered in a manner like the killer in the backseat urban legend, the students at her New England University are put on edge. Her death kicks off a series of murders that mirror a variety of urban legends. Is the killer a student or something else?
Yes.
Urban legend.
Urban legend.
Wow, some late 90s horror. Neither of us had seen it. And
nope.
I was mightily impressed. I started hearing inklings that this was really good just within the last maybe 2 years or so. And my hopes were measured but pretty high. And I was not disappointed. Before we get too deep into it, though, I think this already came up on the cult of Based on True Crime on Facebook. But there are certain 90s movies, not many of them, that I skipped over. And this was one of them, the urban legends. And I think the I I Know What You Did the Summer Before Last. That's it, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's the one. I was so surprised that you hadn't seen that. You watched it recently, though.
Yeah, I watched both of those movies within the last year. And I thought those were a lot of fun, too. But, you know, when I think of these kinds of movies, I think of The Faculty. I think of, like, you know, not necessarily all teen horror. I think of, like, a Dusk Till Dawn and, you know, a lot of those things that had bigger budgets and a lot of people saw them. And I just kind of missed those one urban legend-y ones.
Yeah, but you watch all the Scream ones. Is that just because it was Wes Craven?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Director of A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, you got your mention in.
I
Congratulations.
Did. Oh, thank you. Thank you. What's my prize?
A kiss.
All right.
Mwah.
Thank you. So this movie covers a lot of urban legends.
Yes, it does.
I have a list.
Okay, let's hear them.
All right. So this list I pulled because someone apparently did their homework. And thank you, Wikipedia, for this because I was trying to mentally note them all and couldn't. I know we definitely shouted some of them out as we were watching it. So I mentioned The Killer in the Backseat in the intro, and
it's probably my favorite scene in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Was that opening scene with the killer in the backseat.
Oh, what a great opening. And it was pretty cool because we had a brief appearance by Brad Dourif.
Yes.
That was
perhaps
a pleasant surprise.
Best known as the voice of Chucky.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. He did such a good job being somewhat menacing while, you know, not being the true bad guy. I knew as soon as I saw him that it was the killer in the backseat one.
Yeah, you called it. You called it right away. That was so good. And it made it a little extra tense because I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. Ah.
Yeah.
So it was well shot and very, very well staged. And then her murder, well, we just said this, is that the university treats it just like a cover-up as in the Hatchet Man legend. Ooh, I feel like that adds an extra layer to the story, to the movie.
Yeah.
So Brenda and Natalie try to invoke Bloody Mary, which only has like a brief moment. But
and they're not even in front of a mirror, which was weird to me.
Yeah, that was really weird because I was like, I'm pretty sure there needs to be a mirror. And it was just like a boarded up door. But it was to the, I guess, the building where allegedly the murders took place of a killer going, what, room to room and whoever answered the door to the knock, he would stab them.
Yeah. To me, that also felt a little bit Hatchet Man-y, although it was not hatchet murders per se, but I feel like college mass murders is what it is at its core.
Yes. Yeah. They snuck in the Pop Rocks and Coke urban legend in pretty slickly. I thought that was good.
Yeah. I liked it. So it was introduced in the class they're taking on urban legends taught by the great
Robert Englund.
Yeah. Freddy so many himself. Opportunities for Nightmare on Elm Street references in this one.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, definitely. But that
but
was
it was
good.
It was fun that it actually came back later as sort of a way someone's killed, except I don't think you need the Pop Rocks when you're force feeding them Drano.
Probably not.
Probably not.
They also sneak in the little Mikey from the cereal commercial. Mikey likes it. Oh, didn't that kid die from eating Pop Rocks and Coke? And then they're like, oh, no. And it's pretty cool because Robert Englund's character is teaching a course on urban legends.
Yeah, I love it.
So there's the one where the hanging from the tree, basically. Where
yes.
you hear the footfalls on the roof of the car.
So in my experience, that is part of the Hookman legend, although
yes,
they
yes.
don't specifically reference the Hookman in this movie. But my version of Hookman was always they hear the scraping from the hook on the outside of the car. The boyfriend goes to investigate it, gets killed by the Hookman and hung above the tree. And then the sound on the roof is the feet hanging. I think there are a few versions of that mixing and matching versions.
There's the aren't you glad you didn't turn on the light message.
Yes, I like that one.
Yep, where poor Daniel Harris is murdered.
Aw, David's favorite actress ever.
There is the ankle slashed under the car.
Oh, I hate that one. I know it's an urban legend, but that's one of the ones that I think is true.
It just seems so
it
feasible,
just seems true.
And I feel like the pain of getting your like Achilles tendon slashed would be awful. That would definitely take me out and take me down.
I definitely check under my car. If I'm like parked in a dark, empty parking lot.
Yeah.
Totally.
The next one I had never heard. So when you mentioned, when they mention it, then you mention it, I had to ask you because I was like, I don't get what's going on here. But the Red Hot Chili Peppers song, I Love Roller Coaster, someone mentions how it contains a real scream of murder.
Yep. But and that is an urban legend.
Yeah, I never heard that. That was interesting. There's the old lady who went to dry her wet dog in a microwave. The worst
one. I've never heard of that urban legend. And as soon as he said that, I just buried my face in a blanket and I didn't look up until David said it was safe. So,
yeah.
Yep.
Yep. There was a whole movie based around what microwaves can do. Microwave Massacre.
Nope.
This is the creepiest, sleaziest movie I've ever seen in my entire life.
Well, is it people or is it animals?
Yeah, it's people.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't even remember how. There's not even that many microwave. There's. Yeah. Anyway, there's the kidney heist, which is.
I do like the kidney heist.
You know, going and waking up in a bathtub full of ice and your kidneys have been taken and someone has sold them on the black market. There's the central urban legend that is around what the whole plot is centered around. And that is the driving with your headlights off. And then after the other driver flashes them, they turn around and pursue you and you get into like a wreck or whatever, or forced off the road and
killed. Yeah. It's supposed to be a gang initiation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that one. Ooh, that one. Yeah. Like I said, moves the plot forward.
It's yeah.
the main thing.
Yeah.
And then this one I didn't even catch until I was like reading this list. And at the end, Brenda is wearing a blue ribbon around her neck. And this is a reference to the girl whose head falls off if she removes ribbon around her neck.
I love that story.
Yeah.
That's one from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's like a more supernatural one, but really good.
Yep.
It made me like rethink that ending.
Yeah.
So that is the long list of ones covered. There is a bunch of them that are referenced. It's the replacing, you know, the roommate's birth control pills with aspirin. There is the needing your stomach pumped after ingesting semen during oral sex. There's the penis captivus, which the couple get stuck together having sex. There's, of course, Robert Englund discusses the babysitter and the man upstairs. There's a rather lengthy portion on that, which was great.
Which we talked about in our episode.
On
Janet Christman.
Yeah, that and the movie When a Stranger Calls. So that one's so good. And of course, Black Christmas. Yeah, the call is coming from inside the house.
Yes.
And then that one's a great one because that gives an opportunity to show how, you know, we all hear these urban legends and I feel like everyone has that moment where you feel that one of them really happened in your hometown or you know it was a real story. And so Brenda's like, that was my story that really happened, not to her, but yeah, you know, in her hometown that happened.
Yeah.
And then the spider eggs in bubblegum would be the killer's next move, and that one was kind of weird, but you know,
I'm glad I never heard that urban legend growing up.
Yeah, I'm not gonna eat any bubblegum now. There's spider eggs in it. So lots and lots and lots of urban legends. And I think it's good that they were able to fit so many in. I feel like the only one that was kind of shoehorned was the Bloody Mary one.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's the most, I mean, it's supernatural, so I understand why they didn't go there. I think they ended up making up for it in that third movie, which neither of us have seen. So
yeah.
I don't know.
One of these days. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So if you guys have seen it, let us know if it's any good, worth watching. And the second one too. We have not seen the second one. If it's any good, give us a shout out and we'll check it out. So the movie was written by Silvio Horta, who in terms of list of credits doesn't have like a ton of genre work or like film scripts, but he did write this and Urban Legends Final Cut, which was the sequel. I think one of the things that he's mostly credited for was as a producer, writer, co-creator of the TV show Ugly Betty.
Which is pretty good. Yes, I saw the first couple seasons. But I definitely did not finish it.
Oh, right on. Yeah.
Too much television out there.
It's true. So this was directed by Jamie Blanks, who is an Australian director, but also a composer, a multi-talented person. And this was really the second film. He had done a movie called Silent Number, which sounds like also like a horror movie, but it was in Australia in 1993. And then this film came out in 1998. And he followed this up with Valentine that came out in 2001, which is, yes, a Valentine's Day slasher movie. It co-stars Denise Richards, David Boreanaz, and Katherine Hegel.
Yeah, Angel from Buffy.
Yep. He did a movie called Storm Warning, and then another one called Long Weekend in 2008. This cast is pretty full of some pretty
good
actors.
Very familiar faces, yes.
Yeah, I thought everybody did a good job. It's Alicia Witt plays the lead, Natalie. And she is, well, I think most well-known now as a musician. But in looking her up, I did not know this, but she was discovered by David Lynch for his adaptation of Dune. She played Alaya Atreides, who is Paul's little sister. She was also in some Twin Peaks and a whole lot of television. Rebecca Gayhart plays Brenda, and you immediately recognized her since I hadn't seen it in so long. You know, it reminded me though when you mentioned it how she was in Dead Like Me.
Yes, I love that show.
Yeah, she was also in that science fictiony TV show Earth 2. She's in the film Jawbreaker, and she's actually in the TV series Firefly for about a second because she was fired on the first day of filming the show and recast with Marina Baccarin. And if you all are big fans of From Dusk Till Dawn 3, Texas Blood Money, she's in that too.
I've not seen that one. Is it just as good as the first one?
It's better than the second one.
It's better than the second one.
Yeah.
It's better than the first one.
No, the first one is so good. Bruce Campbell's in one of them, I think. I can't remember. It's been so long since I saw those. Maybe one of the biggest names, at least now, in terms of currently working, Jared Leto, plays Paul. And he got his start as a young'un in My So-Called Life, which I think was canceled really, really soon. But Claire Danes was his co-star, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
He is in that movie, Fight Club. He has a band. You may have heard of it, 30 Seconds to Mars.
I may have heard of him, yeah.
Also, he is very notorious for playing the Joker.
Yep. He's the Joker with the face tattoos.
He is. Yeah. Yes. Yep. Which is the worst. He's decent in Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I thought he was good.
Overall, this was the movie I probably liked him in most.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I'm going to say about that. Joshua Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Plays Damon. Of course, Dawson's Creek, that TV show that ran for like forever. He's apparently in a bunch of the Mighty Ducks movies.
Okay.
As a child.
Yeah.
He's in the American remake of Shudder.
Which is not nearly as good as the original.
No.
But I have seen it.
All right. Yep. Me too. He's in Fringe.
He's so good in Fringe.
I have not seen any of Fringe.
I loved it. I watched a bunch of it when I moved to St. Louis because I was missing Boston. And it takes place in Boston.
I want to see it at some point. There's a funny little moment actually in Urban Legend where they get in the car and the radio comes on and the I Don't Want to Wait song starts playing, kind of quickly shuts it off.
Yeah.
It's a great, great, great Dawson's Creek joke there. We mentioned Danielle Harris plays Tosh, and she is Natalie's roommate who, spoiler alert, gets killed. And she is the one that, don't you wish you turned on the lights?
No, it's aren't you glad you didn't turn on the light? Yeah. Don't you wish you turned on the light? No.
Wait. Yeah. It's got that totally backwards.
Yeah.
Tara Reid's in this. She plays Sasha. Genre related, she had her film debut in A Return to Salem's Lot.
I didn't realize they made a sequel to Salem's Lot.
Yep. Yeah. It's pretty entertaining. I think it's a little difficult to get a hold of. But we should maybe watch it sometime soon. Also genre related, if you count Sharknado, she's in 6 of those movies.
Wow.
Yeah. But I'm probably like most famous for being in the American Pie movies. And then just kind of rounding out the cast, Michael Rosenbaum plays Parker. I really just know him as Lex Luthor from Smallville, but he's been in so many different things, kind of, you know, character actor.
Yeah, but I also know him as Lex Luthor in Smallville.
And, of course, Robert Englund plays Professor Wexler.
Yay!
Yeah, yep. I love his role in this. And he's a suspect through portions of the movie.
Yeah.
They kind of set him up for that. And then Loretta Devine, who has such a very distinct voice, and she's also a great actor. She plays Reese, who is the campus security, and she has some really great moments throughout the movie, but especially at the end.
Yep. And then the very next day after watching Urban Legend, we saw her in Sierra Burgess's Loser on Netflix.
Yep.
She plays the teacher. That was funny.
Yeah, it was good. So this movie was made on a $14 million budget. And it was pretty successful, around $38 million. So, nice. Yeah.
That's probably why I got so many sequels.
I think so. I think it did. That seems good to me. I'd take that sort of money. All right. So a little bit of more facts, because I think we already covered all the urban legendy stuff, which was really the most interesting to me, honestly. But one of the things, I guess, like while they were developing the screenplay and the movie, is they had designed the killer's outfit, which is sort of this big, thick parka with like a black gauze face, so you can't see the killer's features. And that was because it was movie was originally going to be set in the middle of the winter. When they, you know, were doing locations and stuff, it turned out that the weather was too warm, so couldn't do winter. They didn't want to pay for fake snow. It's also a little more expensive to dress all your extras in winter clothes. So they were like, hey, we'll just keep the costume.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't stand out as being like weird or anything. It's just like, oh, it's like a shrouded in a giant hooded killer.
Yeah, no, it did not stick out to me at all as weird. I didn't even kind of think about what season the movie was taking place in.
Yeah, no, yeah. Me neither. While they were casting this movie, though, I guess they thought of a lot of people for the various roles, and they wanted Reese Witherspoon to play Natalie. They also wanted Melissa Joan Hart to play Natalie when she wasn't able to do it or wouldn't, or whatever the story is. Sarah Michelle Gellar actually accepted the role of Sasha, but she was filming Buffy the Vampire Slayer and could not schedule around it, I guess. It was like, oops, I signed on the dotted line, I can't do it. So I'm sure getting out of that contract was very tricky.
Oh, I'm sure.
We mentioned Supernatural on our early part of this episode, and there are actually a lot of connections to that series. So the season one of Supernatural had a bunch of urban legend episodes, and you know you mentioned several of those to me while we were watching it. And in specifically the "Aren't You Glad You Didn't Turn on the Light" was used in the episode Hookman.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Julian Richings, who played the sort of creepy janitor guy, I think he has a very distinct look, and I think they kind of throw you that bone of sort of an unusual looking dude as a potential killer.
Yeah. Oh, the first thing I saw him in was the episode of Supernatural where he plays Death. So the four horsemen of the apocalypse are in it, and they have to like collect rings from them, and he plays Death, and he's just it's the tiniest role, and he's amazing in it, and he stood out so much that every time I've seen him in something, and I've done this to you multiple times, it's like Death from Supernatural. It's Death from Supernatural.
Yeah.
Oh man, yeah. Ooh, it's an amazing scene. Man, I love Supernatural.
Yeah.
The first.
And he's fun in this.
First five seasons.
Oh, yeah. But I like him in this. He's a good character actor. Lara Divine is also in this. She was in a ton of episodes.
Yes.
Alicia Witt, I guess, has also appeared in Supernatural, and Robert Englund as well.
Robert Englund? What episode?
Some of the later episodes.
Oh.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't know anything past season five.
You're saying we should start watching it again.
Well, we have the box set, so it's, what is it, first eight seasons?
Yeah, but I think I've seen the first eight seasons, and now they're on season, like, 12.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right, yep. Well, they said Robert Englund's in it. If I'm wrong, let me know. Throw rotten vegetables at me.
Oh, never.
All right, now to, well, what I consider my favorite part of the movie portion, where I run some taglines by you, Chelsea.
Yes.
All right, there's actually quite a few, which is nice. Starting with, it happened to someone who knows someone you know. You're next.
I understand where they're going with that, but I don't love the execution.
Haha, just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it can't.
That one's okay.
That's like a threat.
Yeah.
Urban legends can kill.
No.
At Pendleton University, urban legends are coming true.
No.
Coming true. There's an exclamation point on that one.
Yeah.
All right. Never talk to strangers. Never answer the phone. Never flash your lights. Never leave the car. And always believe what you're told.
No. No. I really don't like that one, actually.
That might have been one of the worst ones I've read out of all of these episodes we've done. Terrible tagline. What you don't believe can kill you.
I like that one.
Get ready to face your worst fears.
No, I like the what you don't believe can kill you.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
I was kind of betting on that one.
Yep.
All right, cool. Get ready to face your worst fears could be like so many things.
Isn't that like a TV show?
Oh, Fear Factory?
Yeah.
Fear Factory?
Something.
Fear
Factor?
Fear Factor.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Fearsome Factor? No. Fierce Factor?
Yeah, so we are going to jump into, I'm going to put you on the spot and talk about if your favorite urban legends, which you already did mention that.
Yes, I did.
But I want to mention mine. But successful movie?
Yes, yes. I enjoyed it very much. I feel like I don't know when I'm going to slip up with the big spoiler. So I want to say right here, this is one of those movies where you're not sure who the killer is, but it's probably one of these characters. We're going to be spoiling that. So if you want to watch the movie and you have not seen it yet, just stop it now and go watch it before you finish it, because I think it's worth saving that twist for the end. Right, we only have people here now who have watched the movie. It was Brenda. And I loved it. Oh, I really enjoy a twist where it's a female slasher. I think there aren't many like that out there. So that's all part of striving for equality, gender equality, more female slashers, please. And yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. I love the tone of it. I grew up, watching movies like I Know What You Did Last Summer and Scream and The Faculty and all of that era of horror movies. And this, I think it is somewhat formulaic, but it's a formula that I like. So, the group of friends and the person with the dark secret that comes back. Yep.
Well, and they're not even all like friends. They're not like best friends,
Yeah, well, I think there are interesting dynamics.
Yeah. And I like that because like Michael Rosenbaum doesn't get along with Josh Jackson and you see
that.
Well,
he doesn't get along with Jared Leto.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry. Which I thought that was cool. And
yeah, and it's like Joshua Jackson and it was Alicia Witt's character. He's like pretending to be nice and friendly and turns out he's kind of a scumbag. But I like that, through all that, you're like, oh, but at least there's the friendship between Alicia Witt's character, Natalie, and Rebecca Gayhart. They seem like they're such good friends. And then the twist is that actually before college, Natalie had, been driving with a friend and they decided to pull the like flashing lights urban legend. They started chasing someone after he flashed their lights at them and he ended up dying in a car accident. And that was her boyfriend. So it turns out she's killing all of these people to ultimately get revenge on Natalie. It was good. I called the twist, but not until almost the last moment.
Yeah.
So I like that. Yeah.
Well, and I like that, Robert Englund so often playing a villain and he's an expert on these urban legends and they kind of misdirect
the survivor. He's the like lone survivor of the Stanley Hall massacre.
Yeah. And between him and Julia Richings's character, the two of them, you think maybe are they working together? Is it one of the kids? Is it a Scream scenario where it's two boys? Or
that's what I was wondering, especially because like they weren't finding Joshua Jackson's body. And I was thinking back to the Scream where one of them dies but doesn't really die. But yeah, turns out that was not the case. It was an even better twist.
Yep, what a twist. Well, cool. Yeah, this was such a fun movie. It was cool to go back and find a 90s movie that is a lot of fun like this. And it wasn't, I don't know, I don't want to mislead you all and say it wasn't gory, but it didn't seem extraordinarily gory. I guess because I watch a lot of horror movies.
You really don't see much. You see the roommate's body and she's dead and her like wrists are slit, but you don't feel like nowadays if it was happening you see like a close-up of the knife going into the wrist and it's like but no, this was definitely not over the top.
Yeah, well, when I was reading where Brenda has Natalie tied up at the end and she's like, oh, I'm gonna take one of your organs, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't care which, oh, what's this, where is this, this is it's a kidney or whatever, I'm just gonna grab whatever I can, whatever comes, I find
first, yeah.
And I guess they like added the like kind of her cuts and stuff like after they had already filmed the movie. They were like, oh, we needed just a little more squeamishy stuff.
Yeah.
And added that in. I was like, oh yeah, that was that made me squirm a little bit.
Yeah. Oh man, Rebecca Gayhart is a really good actress too. She plays crazy very well in that last scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she has the stinger at the end, which was fun.
Yeah.
That everyone's, it's like they flash forward and it's like another group of students all talking about urban legends and, oh, we heard there was a killer, and it's like the story you just watch.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, spoiler alert is that like she's like, oh, that's not how it went down at all. And then that's when she has like the ribbon around her neck. So
yeah, so good.
Yep. All right, well, that wraps up kind of our discussion of the film Urban Legend. And I did want to end this episode, just I wanted to just talk about my favorite urban legend,
which is the same as my favorite urban legend, so go for it.
Yeah, it's the hook. And there's something just about the idea of the hook that is just really spooky and scary. And I remember just like that nugget of the story when I was a kid of a hook hanging from the side mirror of a person's car. I was like, wow, that of course indicates that something was about to happen, but maybe it didn't. And in looking back on the story, I was able to find kind of one of the big sources of the story, which was from the Dear Abby advice column. And this was published on November 8th of 1960. And it reads, "Dear Abby, if you're interested in teenagers, you will print this story. I don't know whether it's true or not, but it doesn't matter because it served its purpose for me. A fellow and his date pulled into their favorite lover's lane to listen to the radio and do a little necking. The music was interrupted by an announcer who said there was an escaped convict in the area who had served time for rape and robbery. He was described as having a hook instead of a right hand. The couple became frightened and drove away. When the boy took his girl home, he went around to open the car door for her. Then he saw a hook on the door handle. I will never park to make out as long as I live. I hope this does the same for other kids. Jeanette."
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the hook man. It's a classic. And I think that to me, what really stands out is that lover's lane thing, because, you know, there's actually multiple times over, you know, the decades where there were serial killers targeting people on lover's lanes.
Yeah.
Zodiac and the Phantom Killer in Texas. You know, even Son of Sam was targeting, you know, couples in cars. So basically what I'm saying is I agree with the writer. I will never neck in a lover's lane. I'm sorry, David.
All right.
Yeah.
I guess we won't do that.
Nope.
I think the variation of that I had heard was maybe the like being closely followed with like headlights or brights on behind you. And then it was, I think that maybe ties into the, like the person in the back, but it was, you get home thinking that the terror was the person following you, but it was, you know, they saw a hook dangling or whatever.
Yeah.
From the side mirror.
Yeah. I feel like quite a few of those have been combined over the years, right? Because you have the hook man, but then I think the body hanging over the car is not necessarily always hook man, but I've definitely heard those combined. I think I've also heard it combined with the killer in the backseat. And actually in Adventures in Babysitting, you have the hook man combined with the babysitter and the man upstairs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. Yep. Good stuff.
I'm a big fan of urban legends.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's our folklore, and I think that's why so many of these stories were featured in Supernatural, because it's all about, you know, American folklore is kind of where they get their ideas.
Yeah. Yep. Well, thanks for joining us. If you have a favorite urban legend, please write to us. Wherever, you know, if you want to do it in our cult, that's cool. Or on Patreon itself. Anywhere is good for us.
And thanks so much to our new patrons. I think we had like 2 new patrons join just in the last couple weeks. So I hope you've been enjoying our back catalog of episodes.
Yes. And we're getting this one in just under the wire as your September reward.
Yes. And we're still thinking about what to do for next month. I want to pick out something that's nice and Halloween themed. So hopefully we'll get a poll up in the next couple weeks and get you something in time for Halloween.
Cool. Well, since you're following us here, we assume you know all about our social media. So we'll spare your time. Wanted to give a shout out to Nico Vitis, though, our composer of our theme song and supporting music. Thanks so much. His band is We Talk of Dreams, and you can find him at We Talk of Dreams all over the internet. All right. Well, thank you so much again for your support. We will talk to you soon. Halloween's right around the corner, and that means that death is but a door.
And time is but a window.
We'll be back.